You were bonkers when you met. You were really in bad shape.
Yeah, when I met Dr. R.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was. I really was. But I had been unhappy for a very long time, from adolescence, from the age of 12, sitting awake at night and really not knowing whether other children my age wanted not to be alive or not. And it took moving to New York, which is such a crazy city that everything just instantly came to the surface, for everything to be expressed. Because I had been, for many years cutting, which I know is now, glibly people will say it's the new anorexia, because it does seem to be at high schools, almost catching, like girls are doing it sometimes as a fad. It was one of those things I thought I had invented. But I was cutting, and they say that cutting is that which cannot be expressed, that which cannot be said out loud. And so once I met Dr. R, everything started being expressed. It was an instant. I didn't get well right away. I was really in love with the idea of madness. I think that's the bad influence of Ophelia. I didn't want to leave it behind for a while because I could see how much effort it would take to be in the real world and to be sane, and I wasn't ready to do that. But as soon as I fell out of love with the idea of being mad and the idea of being scarred, and I think to a degree actually vanity was something that helped, was I'd look at my body and see all these scars and think, well, this looks really awful. I should probably stop while there's less rather than more. But also just growing up, I think, just getting older. I was so young, and I've been working since I was 15 years old. I've been earning my own wage since then. I think I had a midlife crisis early, probably, hopefully.
I think such a good guy as, the cliche is girls marry their fathers,
right,
that you would find a better quality of men.
I have now. I tell you, a very difficult thing is that the week I handed in this book, which was just over a year ago, I met my boyfriend, who I'm with now, who's actually with me here in Toronto. And he's just awesome and kind and clever and funny and gentle and all those amazing things. But I had to say to him 3 months in, when it became serious, I have this book coming out and you're going to have to read it. And it was such an awful moment. And he did have to read it, and he'll never read it again. And that's a hell of a test of a fairly new relationship, is everything I've put out there to the world in this book.
Because, one guy just gets initials. Yeah. And then there's the bad boyfriend.
Ugh.
Who was...
What an ass.
but it hasn't...
But it was all just extensions of self-harm. If I was bulimic, I was cutting myself, I was on a horrible downward spiral, and the men I picked were just self-harm, but I had them to do it instead of me.
He was... Yeah. I could see the attraction, because you fall for like a movie star. What's the line everybody uses? He's a very good actor.
Yeah. I've always had a thing about brilliant men, and that's what I've always gravitated towards, and that's how I ended up with the movie star. Was someone who just turned out, the world doesn't know, but is highly literary and profoundly intellectual, and that's who I ended up with, and it's on my permanent record. So I don't know, I do feel like in the age of Facebook, actually everyone has a version of this. I had to see posters of this person after we broke up on the subway, but nobody can really get away from their exes in this day and age. Really, the internet has completely changed the way we have relationships, I think. Whether it's being Googled before you even go on a first date, which I always knew was happening, or, things never going away. It's like permanent, it's tattoos, the internet. There's just no way of getting rid of it, and it is the first thing people look at on you. It is.
And through all these different men,
yeah,
there's this very gentle, well, I was going to say he's gentle, but then there are times when he would kick you in the butt, too.
My doctor?
Yeah.
Yeah, there were, but he I mean, the main thing that everything I did with him worked was that he believed I was going to be okay. It was as simple as that. My family, as you said, they're wonderful. They loved me. They're an amazing, supportive family. But they couldn't, in their heart of hearts, say in the worst of it that I was going to be all right.
They worry. And that's natural.
Could, right. But he was the one who could say, I absolutely 100% guarantee you're going to be fine. And I rode the coattails of his faith until I really was okay.
And then after each death, you reach out and find
other patients
who had the same experience.
Everyone says he saved my life. And it's this tapestry. It's almost like a Robert Altman movie with, you know, the 9/11 firefighter who had survivor's guilt. He saved my life. The anorexic, he saved my life. The heroin addict. It's just all these disparate stories of pain and loss and hopelessness and this man turning them around. It's incredible.
Well done.
Thank
Very
you.
Enjoyable, and it is beautifully written.
Thank you.
Even the most horrible sections are gorgeous.
And hopefully funny as
yes.
well.
Yes, oh yeah.
Good.
Thank you. You're welcome. The book is Your Voice in My Head. I've been speaking with the author, Emma Forrest. Your Voice in My Head is a memoir, and it's published by Random House of Canada.